another ripple of amusement. The captain frowned and glanced at his fellows. So did the colonel, though for different reasons, I expect. The next moment was the most dangerous, and I took a breath before continuing. As I am outside the chain of command, I make this request only as a formality. I intend to go, regardless, as it is a facet of my duty. I will safeguard the regiment one way or another.
And if you are killed?
The colonel said. Then you will request a new commissar. The appropriate forms are in my quarters. I looked at the captain as I said this, and his eyes narrowed. The colonel shook his head.
You're right. Of course. I can't stop you. Take one of the men. Captain, volunteer someone.
I'll go, the captain said, and my heart leapt in my chest. I'd known that he'd see it as a challenge. His sort always do, but the colonel gestured dismissively.
No, I need you here. Volunteer a ranker.
I glanced at the colonel, wondering if he'd seen a shadow of my plan. Perhaps he simply worried that if both of us went out, only one of us would come back. Or maybe he feared for me. Any help is welcomed, I said.
I'll find someone willing, the captain said.
And for a moment, just an instant, I thought his eyes flashed the barest blue. I kept my expression neutral, despite the satisfaction that filled me. As I'd hoped, they'd taken the bait. I'll tell them to bring supplies. We might be out there for several days.
Then it's settled, the colonel said. Dismissed. Except you, Palomar.
I didn't bother to correct him, my mind already on the task ahead of me. He gestured for me to sit, but I remained standing. Regulations state that a commissar must remain standing in the presence of his regimental commander, so as to emphasize his independence of the chain of command. His aide brought him a drink. I hadn't even heard the little man entered. I wondered how they communicated so effectively. Perhaps it was simply habit. The colonel gulped it down, and the aide poured him another.
A good vintage,
the colonel said, sipping this one more slowly.
Would you care for a drink?
I'm on duty. He paused.
If I ordered you?
I said nothing. The conversation had strayed into unfamiliar territory. The colonel sighed.
Probably just as well. This is the last of the good stuff. We're running low on everything. Even wine.
He looked at me.
Sometimes you disappoint me, Valimar.
The words stung, and I may have flinched. My apologies, Colonel, if I have given offence, I began, but he waved me to silence.
Apologies are a sign of weakness. You are putting yourself in danger. I have better use for you than seeing to a task any ranker could accomplish.
Then why not send them out?
Because we have all the information we need, Commissar. Command has ordered us to hold position. Until we receive orders contrary to that, that is what we will do.
His red eye whirred, focusing on me.
But this isn't about that, is it?
I wanted to tell him, but I knew that he wouldn't believe me. Not really. I don't know what you mean, sir. The colonel hesitated. When he at last spoke, he sounded regretful. I did not like it.
No. Maybe you don't. Sometimes I think I've used you very badly, Valimar, Commissar. Other times I think maybe that I got exactly what I wanted. This regiment would have collapsed under our predecessors. Men like Duco would have run it into the ground. But we made it strong, didn't we?
I did my duty, Colonel, as did you. The colonel made a sound that might have been a laugh. I forgot sometimes that we were both strangers to this regiment. The colonel had brought me on soon after he'd been given command. I never found out what happened to his predecessor. It wasn't important, anyway. The regiment belonged to whoever was in command. It belonged to him, to us.
So we did, as we will continue to do.
He looked at me over the rim of his cup.
Watch your back, Commissar. Duco won't hesitate to shove a knife in if he thinks he can get away with it.
And with those unsettling words, he dismissed me. It was the first time we had ever spoken openly of such things. There had been other Ducos, other officers who could not adapt to the new status quo of the regiment. I had done my duty as the colonel commanded, and we had made room for new officers, ones who might be more amenable to the colonel's way of thinking, but this was the first time he had ever warned me about them. I realized then that he was far more worried than I'd first assumed. I could only guess that was why he'd chastised me so publicly earlier. I also wondered then if the colonel perhaps saw the same things I did. Was that his way of telling me that he knew what was going on, but that his rank prevented him from acting, that he approved of my actions? I hope so. It would be easier to save the regiment with his help. I brought the bayonet, of course. It had served me well enough in my earlier investigations, and I was becoming attached to it. Like me, it was a thing of simple, precise function, dutiful and lethal. It was also easy to conceal. The captain sent me a ranker by the name of Gomes, a tall, strong-looking lump of gristle. He towered over me. He barely spoke, save to greet me as he saluted. I only knew Gomes' name because I was fairly certain that he'd murdered another ranker over a game of cards, though I'd found no proof. Wasting regiment resources was punishable by death, and Gomes knew it, so he'd made every attempt to hide his tracks. I often wonder what inducement the captain had used to convince him to go. Credit, perhaps? That was often enough for a savage like Gomes. Regardless, the moment I saw him, I knew he was going to try and kill me. We set off through the trenches, winding our way to the outermost lines. That was where they began to break down into rough gulches of ever-shifting mud and broken bunkers. The ground was uneven and soft, and more than once we were forced to wait for it to settle before we pressed on. The air was miasmatic, stinking of heat and less identifiable things. I had to don my environmental mask, as well as a pair of thick gloves. Despite the insulation, I could feel the heat seeping from the half-formed walls of the forgotten trenches. They changed as we moved. Walls slid into new shapes, and the trench bottoms rose or sank even deeper, carrying us down one moment and then up the next. We trudged through knee-high sludge and stumbled over dried flats of mud. Geysers of steam spewed into the air as the soup shifted. And more than once I looked back, only to lose sight of Gomes, but he would inevitably reappear, dogging my steps with plodding determination. We crept through fields of the dead. The heat and toxins had warped the remains into strange and unsettling shapes. Flowers of bone poked through the churned mud, spreading marrow-frosted petals to the fiery sky above. Brambles made of slag and bone hung like heavy curtains across our path, and more than once we were forced to cut and twist our way through. The heat grew oppressive, and I was sweating freely beneath my coat. I knew Gomes must be suffering as well, but he said nothing. Gomes was going to try and kill me. I knew this like I knew my own name. That would give me all the excuse I needed to do what must be done. At the very least, it would give me an excuse to investigate further whatever the colonel said. The enemy lines were not close to us. I have implied that they were within sight, but the truth is we couldn't see them. Not really. Between the mists and mud, they were nothing more than an indistinct smudge on the horizon. It took nearly 3 days for us to come within sight of their outermost lines, and even then there was little to see, just trenches and improvised bulwarks, much like our own. Upon sighting them for the first time, I could not help but wonder if they were us. You understand what I mean, of course. The bureaucracy of the Imperium is vast and sluggish, and mistakes can occur easily. Regiments can find themselves ordered to take a world that has already been taken, and no amount of protest will convince those in charge otherwise. They see only numbers, not men. That is the difference between them and men like the colonel. In that instant, as these heretical thoughts flitted at the edges of my certainty, I wondered if that was why the colonel seemed so evasive and tired lately, if he knew, as he almost certainly would have to, that we were facing not Xenos, but fellow servants of the God Emperor, if that was why he seemed disinclined to advance, because he was hoping, praying that the mistake would be noticed by his superiors before it was too late. But of course such thoughts are ridiculous. Though men are fallible, the God Emperor is not, and he would not have sent us to this hellish world were we not needed. Indeed, I suspected that we had been sent for good reason, that I had been sent for good reason. And I was right. Over the course of the 3 days, I had got to know Gomes well, not personally, but men of his sort are open books to me. He was a brute, likely a criminal before joining the regiment. That explained his murderous nature, but he was cunning as well. He hid his eyes from me. He never looked at me full on. No matter how I tried, I couldn't catch him out. Every time I looked at him, he was facing away. Finally, I realized that, eyes or no eyes, I was going to have to take a chance. Without speaking, I retrieved my rangefinders. They were blocky and old, another item from my collection. I had been forced to discipline one of the regimental gunners not long after I joined, for needless expenditure of the God Emperor's ammunition. He'd been repelling an enemy advance, but that was no excuse for such wasteful displays. I wriggled through the mud, climbing a low slope to the edge of the trench, past broken bulwarks and shrouds of razor wire. I focused the rangefinders on the enemy emplacements. I saw nothing, even with their enhanced view. Sometimes I think about that moment. Part of me was hoping to see something, anything, to see who was manning those guns. But all I saw was steam and mist and mud. And then Gomes made his move, as I had expected. He'd crept up so quietly that if I hadn't been prepared, I might not have noticed until it was too late. The captain had chosen his assassin well. The cords slipped around my neck as easy as you please and tightened instantly. But before Gomes could drive a knee into my back, I pitched to the side and rolled down the slope, back to the bottom of the trench. Startled, he was dragged off balance. He gave a muffled yelp as I sent him tumbling over me. I had the bayonet out before he could crawl to his feet, and I lunged. His big hands slammed shut over mine, pinning the blade between us. My momentum was enough to carry him backwards, and he slammed into the remnants of an old shelter. I could hear him cursing, but I was only looking at his eyes. They weren't blue. I didn't know what it meant. Not then. Regardless, he was trying to kill me. I'm stronger than I look. Gomes had clearly thought I'd be an easy kill. We strained against one another there in the collapsing trench, mud lapping at our shins. I didn't want to use my last pistol. Any shot, any sound might bring the enemy down on us. Even so, I needed answers. And Gomes could provide them. I drove my knee up, catching him in the abdomen. He grunted and twisted, trying to throw me off balance. The mud gave way behind him and he sank back. I leaned all my weight against the bayonet, driving him deeper into the shifting mud. His eyes widened as loose bones and bits of debris spilled over us. The moment's distraction was all I needed. His grip slackened just for an instant, and I wrenched my hands to the side, breaking his hold. I slashed the bayonet across his belly, just beneath the edge of his flak armor, and stepped back. He bent forwards, clutching at himself. The mud had hold of him, and he thrashed, trying to get free, blood bubbling between his fingers. His eyes were still brown, though. I held up the bayonet and pointed it at him. "Trying to murder a superior officer? The sentence is death. Do you want it here or after a tribunal?" He groaned.
"Bastard."
"Yes. Why did you try and kill me?" He continued to thrash, trying to get free. He almost made it, but I lashed out with a boot and drove him back into the sloughing wall of the trench. He bit back a scream. I leaned close, holding him in place with a hand on his shoulder, and put the bayonet to his throat. I was fairly certain that he wouldn't risk his guts falling out to try and throttle me. "It'll take you a long time to die from that sort of wound, hours even. Or it can be quick. It's your choice."
"Paid," he grunted.
"By whom?" He glared at me. Moving quickly, I reached into his belly and pulled something wet and soft out from between his weak hands. He shrieked like a pig as I twisted the soft thing until it burst in my hand, spilling fluids into the mud. "Tell me," I said. He didn't, overcome as he was by pain. It was just as well that I already knew. I cleaned the bayonet on his sleeve and put it back in my coat pocket before wiping my hand off on his chest. "A bad bargain. More than your life is forfeit." I picked up my pack and his. Wasted supplies are a sin in the God Emperor's eyes.
"Wait," he croaked, reaching for the edge of my coat. "Kill!"
"I already have. It is for the God Emperor to take you, in his own time." I left him there, sitting slumped in the slowly rising mud. I did not look back. I feel no regret for his death. Gomes had tried to kill a commissar and failed. The sentence was just. The next time the guns fell silent, I began my slow journey back. When I reached our lines days later, the sentries on duty didn't challenge me as quickly as regulations stated. I considered executing them as well, but refrained. Time enough to punish them later. I was not surprised to find the captain waiting for me, though I know that he was surprised to see me. "Gomes?" he asked, not looking at me. "A regrettable accident. The soup has him now." "What sort of accident?" "Commissar?" I brushed past him without answering. He continued to call after me for some time. His voice reminded me of a Vox recording. Artificial and lifeless. Inhuman. It took two more scouting missions before I got my answers. I made sure not to kill either of them. It wouldn't do to arouse suspicion, not after what had happened to Gomes. Also, neither had blue eyes, or if they did, I never noticed. But the fourth, that was the one I had been waiting on. The colonel was reluctant to agree to more after Gomes. I don't blame him, even now. He must have known what had happened, or at least suspected. He'd known me too long to accept my answer for what it was. Like the God Emperor, he saw through my necessary falsehoods, but accepted them for what they were. He was a good man then. a great man. You may wonder why I continued to hide my suspicions from him. It was not out of malice, I assure you. No, I knew the burdens he carried better than most. He was a great man, as I've said. He had achieved a high rank and survived much in service to the God Emperor. My suspicions were based on circumstantial evidence at best. I needed more proof, you see, incontestable proof as to the nature of the conspiracy, before I could bother him with it. Unfortunately, after my third mission brought back little of note, he declined to permit me a fourth.
"I understand that you feel constrained, Commissar," he said. "But the risk is too high, for too little gain. What intel you've gathered is nothing more than what we see here."
He gestured to the picked captures that adorned the walls of the command bunker. "I need to get closer," I said.
"Any closer, and you'll be right up against their emplacements."
"Then that's where I'll go."
"No."
The colonel shook his head. "Permission to speak," the captain said. He was one of a handful of other officers in the bunker. Not all of them had been invited to this meeting. The circle of trust had grown smaller over the days and weeks. There were currents I was unable to navigate, but I noticed them all the same. The colonel was looking more haggard every day, and the number of officers who jumped at his command was shrinking. Some had been stripped of their rank and cashiered, sent to the rear. Others had been isolated, left to their tiny command in the farthest trenches. He was losing control. The regiment was suffering a malaise, a faltering of discipline and mettle. Sitting in one place, under the shadow of enemy guns, it wasn't surprising. But I knew it was made worse by a deeper rot than any of them realized. The colonel nodded.
"By all means, Duco. Speak your mind."
"I think the Commissar is right." I fought the urge to smile. If I'm being honest, I hadn't been expecting it, not so soon at any rate. I thought I'd have to kill a few more like Gomes. The colonel was surprised as well. His good eye widened slightly.
"Do you?"
he said, and I could hear the consternation in his voice. He was afraid for me, I think. I regret that. The colonel was a good man, a good officer. I was proud to serve him. But the regiment was greater than one man. "I do." The captain looked at me. His face was set, his eyes brown. He was a clever one, whatever he was. I still wasn't sure about him, about whether what I had seen was real or just my imagination. I wanted him to be one of them, you see, but I am possessed of enough discipline to question such desires. I wasn't a savage like Gomes, killing on a whim. I was no murderer, after all. The captain looked tired. I realized that they all did, not just the colonel. They all looked worn down and haggard, as if the weight of the war were pressing their souls flat. Their uniforms were stained, some were unshaven. They flinched at the boom of the enemy guns. Cowards and weaklings. Only a weak man fears the foe he can see. Only a weak man considers betraying his own regiment. I intended to make them strong again. It was all I had ever wanted. It was why the colonel had brought me to the regiment, to make it strong, to purge it of weakness. That was a commissar's duty, my duty. "In fact, I'll go with him this time," the captain continued. "Maybe I'll spot something the others missed." He looked at me. "If you find that acceptable, Commissar?" I did, but I glanced at the colonel before I answered. I expected him to argue, as he had when the captain had volunteered before. Instead, he simply shook his head. I looked at the captain. "I do. We'll leave this evening. Bring only what you need." The captain nodded brusquely. The colonel dismissed us with a wave of his hand, and the others filed out quietly. I made to follow, but the colonel stopped me.
"Valimar,"
the colonel said. He caught my arm. I flinched back, but he held tight.
"Look at me, boy."
His voice was low, and I could smell something on his breath. The men sometimes brewed an illicit form of alcohol in the latrines. Potent stuff, if you didn't mind the taste, or the smell, or the texture. I tried to step back, but he didn't release me. "Commissar," I said.
"Yes. My commissar."
He frowned. His face was sagging, as if all the strength were going from him in dribs and drabs. It is painful to see a strong man collapse in on himself, and I knew then that he feared for the regiment as much as I, though he had not said it out loud.
"I thought I told you before. He wants you dead."
"I am aware."
"I don't think you are. Not really."
He pulled me close, and his sour breath washed across my face.
"I need you alive, Valimar. Come back in one piece."
He released me and turned away. Back to his maps and his fears and his booze. I saw his aide slink forth, drink in hand, and I wondered how often the scene repeated itself on a given day. He was a good man, the best of men. It hurt to see him weak, to see him frightened. "I will do my best, Colonel," I said. But he wasn't listening. His mind was already on other problems, unrelated to me. The captain was waiting for me outside the bunker. He didn't look at me.
"What did he say?"
he asked. "He told me to come back in one piece."
"Sound advice," he said.
"We'll see what we can do about that, shall we?" I didn't care for his tone. There was no arrogance in it now, only grim determination. I wanted to shoot him then and there, but I noticed the colonel's aide watching me from the bunker entrance and pulled my hand away from my last pistol. As he retreated into the bunker, I said,
"Yes.
Make ready, Captain. I will not wait for you."
"I think you will," he said. "But I won't be late."
As he pulled his mask on and turned away, I thought I saw his eyes flash blue. We left the lines when the guns were at their loudest. Their roaring pummeled the air and shook the trenches to their roots. In places, it was hard to keep our feet. Such were the shudders running through the ground. It was as if the world knew that things were coming to a head and sought to delay the inevitable. Perhaps I flatter myself. The world took no notice of us, and neither did the guns. Artillery fell like rain, and I wondered at the expense of it all. I'd once tallied the cost of a day's expenditure of munitions and come away with a newfound appreciation for the Departamento Munitorum. While I was justly proud of my duty, I knew there were those who had heavier ones still. As with Gomes, we moved in silence. The captain seemed to have no interest in speaking to me, and I had none in speaking to him. I realize now, looking back, that I had hated him from the first moment I had laid eyes on him. He reminded me of a particularly odious snot at the scholar progenium, one of the older boys with pretensions to authority, the sort who becomes one of those commissars who winds up shot in the back by his own men. I couldn't remember his name. It wasn't important. But I remember his face even now, the way his eyes had bulged as I'd shoved his head down into the hog slop and held him until his thrashing had ceased. I did not kill him, if you're wondering. As I've said, I'm no murderer. I simply left his unconscious body for the hogs to find. I told myself that if the God Emperor spared him, I would know that I had been in the wrong. And I watched as they ate him, sure in the knowledge that the God Emperor was at my shoulder. I was sure then, too, with the captain at my back. I knew that he wouldn't simply shoot me. He wasn't that sort of fool. I also suspected that he would want to know what I knew about the conspiracy. He would want to know if I had told anyone. No, I knew he would seek to confront me. But I kept the bayonet close, just in case. It was not an easy expedition. The closer we got to the enemy, the less stable things became, even worse than before. The abandoned trenches had been all but consumed by the mud, and thick curtains of toxic fog rolled across the writhing landscape. Again, I was forced to don my mask, and the eyepieces quickly became obscured with condensation as we struggled through the knee-deep mud. It bubbled and burst about us, scorching our coats and uniforms with burning excrescence. The paths I had taken before were gone, and we were compelled to blaze new trails. It began to rain not long after we left our lines, and that added to our tribulations. It was tarry, and stank of burnt rubber. It left black streaks down the captain's coat and mask, and floated atop the mud in serpentine slicks. We were forced to stop often to avoid being buried by mudslides or caught up in turgid riptides, or simply to clean the black smears from the eyepieces of our masks. We climbed hills of ferrocrete rubble and passed through glens of razor wire. You might not believe me, but there was a certain beauty to it. It was a harsh place, but one that encouraged discipline. The captain didn't agree.
"The sooner we leave this place, the better," he said, his voice a harsh rasp.
We had just come within sight of the outermost emplacements of the enemy. I was struck again by their familiarity.
"We should never have come here."
"Cowardice is punishable by death," I said. I did not look at him, but I could feel his eyes on me.
"Not cowardice. Fact. Do you even know what we're doing here?"
I didn't bother to reply. A soldier's duty is to obey orders. Our orders had sent us here. The captain knew that, or he should have.
"I bet you've never even asked," he continued.
He puffed slightly as he spoke. It was hard to talk and navigate the mud, but that didn't stop him. I was puzzled by this sudden volubility. I suspected that he was trying to put me off my guard, and I resolved to pay him little heed. If my reticence bothered him, however, he gave no sign.
"Oh, no. Not you. Not Valimar, the colonel's loyal dog. I knew you were going to be trouble the moment you showed up. We all heard the stories, and we all know why he requested you. He was scared."
I stopped. Mud lapped nearly to my waist, and I ponderously turned, my hand in my coat, my fingers tight about the haft of the bayonet. "The colonel isn't scared of anything." The captain snorted.
"Of course he is. He's scared of losing his face, losing his command, getting blamed for this cock-up. And he's scared of us." He paused. "And he's scared of you, too. Don't think he isn't."
Despite myself, I asked the obvious question. "What do you mean?"
"What do you think I mean?"
He pushed past me, and I almost gutted him there. But his words, something about them set their hooks into me. I watched him tread mud, stumbling and cursing, and then I followed him. We made our way to the enemy, closer and closer, past fallen bulwarks and spills of tangled razor wire. Their lines, like ours, had suffered. I saw no bodies, no bones, no sign of them at all, save the sound of their guns and the way the sky burned overhead. The captain stopped. He leaned against a broken slab of ferrocrete, panting. The mud rose and fell around us like wind-stirred water. He laughed softly.
I knew it.
I thought for a moment that he'd gone mad. What?
Look around, Valimar. What do you see?
The enemy's lines?
Yes, but what do you see?
The enemy, I said. He stared at me for a moment as if I were the mad one, and then shook his head. He spread his arms.
This building material. This is Departamento Munitorum issue. Those guns we hear? They're ours.
He was making no sense, rambling. Stolen, obviously, I said. Rebels.
What rebels? On a world like this?
He took a step towards me and I stepped back. I looked around and realized we were in the remains of what had once been a bunker. The roof was gone, but I could still see the walls, half shrouded in mud.
I knew it. I knew he was hiding something, the fat bastard.
Who?
Bramwell. The colonel.
He looked at me.
Do you even know his name?
It is against regulations to address an officer by name. The captain snorted.
Do you understand what I'm saying, Valimar?
Commissar, I said.
Even you can't be this blind, he snarled.
His eyes flashed behind the lenses of his mask. I saw the trick then. He was trying to sow doubt in my mind, to break my will, to confuse me.
Look around you. Look, damn you!
And despite myself, I did. I saw the bones then, all but hidden, wrapped in tatters of uniform, not one I recognized, but familiar all the same. The captain laughed again.
All this time we've been fighting another regiment. Someone sent us to the wrong part of the war zone. Someone made a mistake, and the colonel knows it. But if he reports it, he'll get the blame. That's how it works. That's why he won't talk to command, why he won't order an assault. So instead we sit and...
His shoulders slumped.
And we sit.
He leaned back, and for a moment I almost felt sorry for him, but only for a moment. You're lying, I said. The colonel is a good man. He wants what's best for the regiment. That's why he sent me here. The captain looked at me. Despite his mask, I could tell he was frowning.
He sent us here to put the fear of the God Emperor into us because he was worried that the men would listen to us rather than him.
As they should, the captain snorted.
You would think that.
Disobeying a direct order from a superior officer is grounds for summary execution.
I bet you use that excuse a lot.
Then, softly,
you killed Gomes, didn't you?
Gomes was a fool.
He was one of the bravest men in the regiment.
Really? I asked, in honest disbelief. If that's true, the regiment is in more trouble than I thought. The captain's hand was on his weapon, but he didn't dare draw it. I watched him, watched his eyes, and the flicker of blue to brown and back again.
I wondered what it meant. Was he even aware of it? Were any of them? You're an animal.
We're all animals, I said. My hand was in my coat, on the hilt of the bayonet. I could have it out in a moment, but he could clear his holster faster, I suspected. The only thing that separates us from beasts is our duty. I know mine. What about you?
You're a murderer.
I am the God Emperor's wrath manifest, and you are not human. He stared at me as if confused.
What?
I don't know what you are. Witch, mutant, Xenos, or something else, but I can see the mark of heresy on you. I gestured to my eye.
just as I saw it on all the others.
The others?
His eyes widened.
How many have you killed?
Not enough, clearly. How many of you are there? How much of the regiment has been compromised? I fired the words like bullets, trying to keep him off balance. My only advantage lay in our isolation. He couldn't fire without drawing attention. We hadn't seen them, but we both knew that the enemy was nearby.
Compromised? Are you mad? Haven't you been listening?
I do not listen to heretics or Xenos.
You are mad. I thought you were just stupid or stubborn, but you're actually mad.
He drew his las pistol then. A fine thing, pearl-handled, chased in gold, a rich man's weapon. They were all rich, the officers, backwater nobility, seeking glory on far-flung battlefields. Or were they? Had whatever it was always been within them? Or was it something new that had found fertile soil in their corrupt souls? These questions ran through my head as I stared down the barrel of his weapon. I am not mad. I simply see more clearly than you wish. When did you realize that I'd noticed? I frowned. What is your purpose? Do you serve the enemy?
Listen to yourself, Valimar, he began.
But his eyes were blue, bright blue.
What are you talking about? I just told you. There is no enemy.
Commissar, I said, and lunged. The edge of my hand knifed against the barrel of the las pistol, swatting it from his grip even as he fired. The whining shot echoed loudly in the trench as I drove the bayonet into him. His eyes bulged and he grabbed at me. His fist caught me on the side of the head and I sagged, dazed. He was lurching away from me, one hand pressed to the wound in his belly. I rose and followed, slow now, taking my time. He was searching for his weapon, but the mud had claimed it. I heard no klaxons, no alarms from the enemy lines. I wasted no time wondering about this. Such mysteries are no better than distractions. My true foe was before me, and I wanted answers. We made a pretty pair, I think, stumbling through that forest of ruin, beneath boughs of rusted steel and through drapes of razor wire. The air thrummed about us, hot and tense. More than once I thought I heard someone moving with us, but saw nothing. Later, I would wonder if perhaps I had not been alone in my hunt, if perhaps the God Emperor guided me then, as he had before, and would again. The captain had courage, I will say that much for him. Human or Xenos, he did not surrender to the fear he must have been feeling. But courage is no substitute for strength, no substitute for faith. I was in service to a power greater than any in the galaxy, and that power would not be denied. The bayonet caught him in the back. I went for the kidneys, the way I'd been taught. He gave a cough and staggered against the side of the trench. I stabbed again and again, clean thrusts, quick, not enough to kill. He was big and there was a lot of blood, like the hogs. And like the hogs, he squealed as I butchered him. That is the proper word for what I did. I am not proud of it, but I am not a dissembler by nature. I will not obfuscate my loss of control. I hated him. By the God Emperor, I hated him, and I let that hate control me. My discipline slipped, and duty suffered. Again and again I drove the bayonet into his yielding flesh. I think I might have laughed. He'd come thinking to befuddle me, to sway me from the light, or failing that, to kill me, and instead I would kill him as I would kill all of them. Finally, he fell into the mud, choking and shaking. Curlicues of red stretched across the ochre surface of the soup. He was trying to crawl away, but the mud held him. I crouched over him and took a handful of his scalp. "They've heard us by now. With the way you're carrying on," I muttered. As if on cue, an alarm sounded, a jangling, familiar whine, much like our own. I heard the murmur of distant voices and saw the sweep of lights. Are they coming to help you, do you think, or will they kill us both? I had no intention of finding out. I wrenched him onto his back. His face was pale, his gaze unfocused. He clutched at me, trying to talk. His blue gaze flickered across my features and then past me as if seeing something else. I realized I'd been too enthusiastic in pursuit of my duty. I leaned close, my hand on his fat chin.
Tell me, what are you? What are your intentions?
But even as I demanded answers, the blue faded to a soft brown, and his features slackened. I thought in those last few moments that he seemed different, as if some burden had slipped from his shoulders, as if my bayonet had freed his soul, even as it claimed his life. I like to think that he recognized my act for the mercy that it was at the end, that he saw the God Emperor standing at my shoulder, welcoming him back to the bowers of humanity. I know now that death freed them in some manner I cannot explain or understand. I think that is why the God Emperor showed me the afflicted. He chose me as his instrument, and I could but follow the course he'd set me. The voices grew louder. The sentries of the enemy were close, and there was no more time to waste. I left him there, to whoever or whatever might find him. As I crept back towards safety, the guns began to roar once more. I had much to consider when I got back to my own lines, but I had little time to do so. The regiment was on alert, tense even, in a way I had never seen before. It was as if some unspoken signal had passed through the trenches. Eyes followed me as I returned. Masks twitched as I passed, and no words of greeting were offered. There rarely were, but this seemed different. There was a hostility in their eyes that had not been there before, or at least not to such an extent. As if they knew something of what had happened, and blamed me for it with wrong-headed idiocy. As I went to make my report, the skies burned and a murmur passed by and ahead of me. I felt the need to keep one hand on my holstered las pistol. I wondered then if my expedition had inadvertently roused the enemy, if there was some sign that they were mustering for an assault. But I decided to make my report before I inquired about such matters. After all, what did it matter to me if they were? I knew my duty, and that was enough. The enemy were to be killed. No thought need be wasted on such matters. I think if there is a flaw in men like the Colonel, it is that. They allow themselves the vice of unfettered thought. Ignorance is strength. To think is to imagine possibilities, and with possibilities comes the potential for defeat. In considering defeat, one might as well surrender to its inevitability. Truly, as it is written, what need does a man have for thought when he has faith in the God Emperor? Maybe that is the answer in the end. Maybe that is why what happened happened. But I get ahead of myself. The officers were waiting for me in the bunker, three of them now. The circle had shrunk much in the captain's absence. Not a blue eye among them. I wondered if they were opportunistic traitors or simply dupes like the unlamented Gomes. It didn't matter, of course. A crime was a crime, and they had committed the worst one of all. They had endangered the regiment, and would continue to do so unless someone stopped them. Unless I stopped them.
"Well, Valimar?"
the colonel asked. He looked as if he had not slept in some time. His organic eye darted towards his subordinates as he spoke.
"What do you have to report?"
he asked the question, as if he already knew the answer. "The enemy lines are in worse shape than ours. Whole sections are submerged under the soup. They're farther back than we thought as well. The maps will need to be updated."
"Where is Duco?"
one of the others asked. Like the colonel, he looked tired, but not fearful or nervous, resigned.
It put me instantly on my guard. Dead? Silence fell. The colonel closed his good eye, and his face twitched. I could not tell whether he was frowning or smiling.
How?
He asked, after a few moments. The enemy, I said. It was not a lie. The enemy had killed him. Not the enemy across the field, but a more insidious one.
He's lying, one of the officers said, just like he was lying about Gomes.
Quiet, Feltz.
No, Duco was right. You are protecting him, and he's a filthy murderer. We have proof. We've seen what he keeps in his quarters.
He faltered as he caught sight of my expression. I had been right. They had snuck in, gone through my private things. I looked at him. Was that a confession? He took a step back and his hand dropped to his sidearm. I had mine out first, but before I could fire, the colonel hit me. The punch caught me in the side of the jaw, and I staggered against a table and went down, my pistol skidding from my grip. But it wasn't the force of the blow that stunned me. Rather, it was the betrayal. The colonel had hit me. He'd hit me when I was only defending myself. And all I could do was sit on the floor and stare at him as he turned on the others.
Holster that weapon, Feltz, or I'll do it for you.
He killed Duco. We all know it, one of them snapped.
We don't. And until there's proof, you'll keep it to yourself.
The colonel glared at them, red eye blazing.
Morale is bad, and I won't have you making it worse with baseless accusations. Is that understood?
Mutterings ran through them. For a moment I thought they would turn on him. They wanted to. I could see it in their eyes. Brown eyes and black eyes and green eyes. Not blue. But the captain had done his work well. Turned them from the path of righteousness with honeyed words and falsehoods, just as he tried to do to me. I knew I would have to kill them. Not then, not there, but eventually. But for the moment they backed off. They seemed almost afraid, not of me, but of the colonel, as if something had changed, some balance had been upended. Whatever advantage they'd imagined that they had was gone. Maybe it had died with the captain. I'm still not sure. The colonel dismissed them brusquely, and he was smiling openly as they went. His aide brought him a drink, and he gulped it down. Wiping his mouth, he spoke.
We are balanced on a precipice, Valimar. In a way, it is a lucky thing, if lamentable, that Duco perished. He would have tipped us over the edge eventually. The others lack the spine. They'll fall into line now that he's gone.
He looked at me. I was still sitting on the floor.
Well? On your feet, man. They're gone.
I rose slowly. I still couldn't believe that he'd struck me, as if I were no more than a dog. Again, I was reminded of the captain's words. While I knew that they must be lies, a part of me felt that there might be a kernel of truth, however much I might wish otherwise. He'd changed so much over the past few weeks.
You'll forgive the play-acting, he said.
I dabbed at my face and my fingers came away red. His blow had split my cheek.
I needed to show them that I have your leash in hand. You understand?
I do. I kept my face expressionless. Inside I was seething, and the colonel knew it. I could tell by the amused glint in his organic eye. I bent and retrieved my last pistol. In the dim light in his filthy uniform, the colonel resembled nothing so much as an animal. I hated him in that moment. I hated them all to some extent, but him most of all. The captain had been right about that, at least. The colonel was slipping. It was all taking its toll. Even the strongest mind eventually broke, but if he fell, he'd take the regiment with him. In that instant, I saw him for what he was. He was a hog, rooting at the base of the garden wall, threatening to bring it all down on our heads. He'd grown lazy in our stagnation, and the enemy, not just those across the battlefield, had taken advantage of his weakness of spirit.
"Are you certain you understand?"
the colonel asked. Startled, I looked at him. He wasn't looking at me, but at my sidearm. I hadn't holstered it. I swallowed, suddenly uncertain, and put it away.
"I can't protect you forever, you know," he continued.
His voice was mild, steady.
"You've been keeping contraband in your quarters. If the men find out..."
"Contraband?" The word tasted wrong in my mouth. What did he mean? I still don't know. I'd confiscated contraband, but it wasn't mine. I wasn't keeping it. It was just there. He looked away. "I don't require protection," I said after a moment. "Not from them."
"I know that this has been hard on you, Valimar."
"It's been hard on all of us. Commissar Valimar," I said. He continued as if I hadn't spoken.
"But it'll be over soon."
His false eye fixed on me, the crimson lens blazing. I was coming to hate that eye. I was beginning to wonder what it truly saw. Could it really be trusted? Machines were inherently corruptible. Scrap code could taint even the most blessed of engines. I thought about all the augmetic parts in the colonel's head and his slovenly demeanour, and I wondered if he were the same man at all, or someone else.
"For the moment, this has to stop," he said. "Duco was the last. No more killing. Not now. Not until this blasted campaign is done."
Outside, the thunder had started again. The dull pound of distant artillery shook the bunker to its roots, rattling the cups on the table and making the picked captures and maps on the walls twitch and flap. Shadows danced, and in them I saw all manner of things a man ought not to see. I could almost hear the groaning of the hogs in the roar of the guns. The sounds merged in my head, crashing over me. I stared at the colonel, watching his lips move, but not hearing him, hearing only the crash and boom. What colour was his organic eye? In that moment, I couldn't recall, and there was no way to tell in the dim light of the bunker with the red glare of his augmetic eye washing out all colour. Just that pulsing, raw, ruby glow staining everything the colour of blood. He was still talking, but I was no longer listening. I had made up my mind, though I didn't know it yet. I had allowed it to go on for too long. I had faltered in my duty out of fear for myself and failed the regiment. Something had to be done, and I was the one who had to do it. It was my responsibility, my duty. I knew then that it was the colonel's weakness that had allowed the infection in. His failure had allowed the regiment to be tainted, not mine, but his. The captain had been right in his own way. In my mind's eye, I saw my shot take him in that hateful crimson lens. Quick, clean, I felt the God Emperor's hand on my shoulder, guiding me. I wondered later if the colonel saw it coming, if he had his own guiding spirit, or perhaps his augmetic senses had detected, gauged, and measured my movement as my hand twitched. Regardless of how, he knew. He saw. And then he hit me. Hard. Harder than before. Hard enough to drive the air out of my lungs and knock me back. Wheezing, I stumbled against the wall. I clawed for my gun as he swept a table aside and lunged. A half-full mug of cold recaf caught me on the side of the head, and then I was down on one knee, my head full of pain. His big hands caught me by the throat and jerked me to my feet. I remember being surprised at his strength. He'd hidden it well. He slammed me back against the wall once, twice, and then held me there, squeezing the life from me as I tore at his wrists. His false eye burned into me, red and fierce.
"Are you mad? Is that it?" he grunted. "Have you finally lost all reason? I am trying to help you, fool."
I saw his eye then, his true eye, like a bright blue marble, like the hogs, like the screaming man, like the captain. One blue, one red, and both glaring at me hatefully. My pistol was still in my holster, the flap undone. I tried to find the breath to answer, but no words came. I wanted to curse him, to tell him that he was the mad one, not me. They were all mad. They say epiphanies often come in moments of great stress. Being throttled by a commanding officer is suitably stressful, I suppose. It was all so clear. So terribly, monstrously clear. As I'd feared, something had got loose among them, some virulent bioplague or memetic witchery. That was what it was. Some ploy of the enemy or something in the air. Regardless of its origin, it was eating the regiment hollow, a cancer of the soul and spirit. And here was the wellspring, though I'd convinced myself otherwise. The colonel had let it in, and it had spread. That was why the God Emperor had sent me to him, to help them all. There was only one way to stop it, only one way to save the regiment. I managed to get my last pistol free as the colonel strangled the life from me. I thrust it beneath his fat chins and sent a shot slamming up into his brain. His hands tightened convulsively and I nearly blacked out. But then his grip went slack and he staggered back, a sound I had never heard before slithering from his open mouth. Smoke slipped between his lips and through the joins of his augmatic parts. The red eye had gone dull, its glare fading to a single mote before winking out. He fell back, and a table shattered beneath his weight. He lay still and limp. Colonel, no more. The sentence had been passed. Rubbing my throat, I pushed away from the wall. My heart was hammering fit to crack my ribs, and I felt loose inside as if I were coming apart at the seams. I stared down at him, trying to right myself with the world. It had been necessary. I'd had to do it, for the good of the regiment. And that didn't make it easier. It wasn't satisfying the way the others had been. It made me sick. Now I knew, you see. I knew that I had not been combating a loss of discipline, but instead something more insidious. Perhaps the men I'd killed had not been shirkers and cowards and madmen, but simply sick. Even the captain, much as I'd hated him. I pushed the feeling aside. The sentences had been delivered fairly. I knew that. No one could fault me for my actions. My only crime would be in not seeing things through to the end. I had a duty, and I intended to see it done. There was only one cure for plague. It had to be burnt out. The sick had to be purified to prevent the spread. I thought that what I was dealing with surely qualified. Killing them one by one was a fool's errand. There was no telling how far it had spread. The regiment was infected, and to preserve it, drastic measures were called for. There was only one way that I knew of, but it meant traversing the trenches back to the rear. I did not bother to hide the colonel's body. Only murderers hide the evidence of their deeds. There were precious few places to hide it that it wouldn't be found, and there was no way to get it out of the bunker without risking discovery. I still feel a pang of regret for leaving him there. He'd been a good man once. He'd given me purpose, a regiment